This is Equestrian Legacy Radio. To Equestrian Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. Today our guests are Robert Trailmeister Eversole, backcountry trail expert, and joining us around the Campfire Cafe is Ryan Murphy, a multi-award winning producer, singer, and songwriter. The Campfire Cafe is brought to you today by our great sponsors at the General Store and the Gallery at East of Santa Fe. Find everything for the horse lover at the General Store and the Gallery at East of Santa Fe at our website, equestrianlegacy.net. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ryan Murphy.
I got holes in the bottom of my walking shoes, whispering a worn-out tune. On the Beaumont Blues, I got holes in the bottom of my restless soul. Some folks say it might be true, Beaumont Blues. She had eyes like the Austin sky, clear as day, like tanzanite. But I didn't see she was looking after me. Till it was too late for eternity. I got more I could lose than I'd like to say. Got the Beaumont Blues and the sky is gray. And I'm wandering through the back streets to exhume the ghost of you. Some folks say it might be true, Beaumont Blues. looking after me till it was too late for eternity. I got more I can lose than I'd like to say. Got the Beaumont blues and the sky is gray. I'm wandering through the back streets to exhume the ghost of you. Some folks say it might be true, Beaumont. Some folks say it might be true, Beaumont.
That's Ryan Murphy's Beaumont Blues, and Ryan is not only a terrific producer, singer, songwriter, but one of the finest musicians in the music industry today. And Ryan Murphy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. Great to be here.
Well, I've been looking forward to having you on and visiting with you.
Me too.
We've got an audience that listens in all across the country and in about 50 countries today, and we want to talk a little bit about your background, and I know that you have some horse background. Let's talk a little bit about that and your family background, and then we'll keep going and talk about your music. But talk to us about the horse business in your life.
Oh, the horse business started, I guess, when I was about 10, down in Cedar Park, Texas, and then in Leander, Texas, and I joined the 4-H Club. And it was just one of the greatest experiences of my life because I got on a judging team. And in 1986, we ended up going to the Southern Regionals in North Carolina, and then we won, and then ended up going to Tulsa to the World Show. And then we won that.
Oh, wow.
It was just unbelievable. We were the 1986 Horse Judging Championship team for the American Junior Quarter Horse Association.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. That is fantastic. Well, I know your mama didn't care anything about riding horses.
No, she started riding back in England before she jumped over the pond there and then just had her boys doing it, too, all our lives growing up.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, talk about where did you grow up?
I grew up in Leander, Texas, which is just north of Austin. So started out in Austin, and then we kind of moved out to North Austin, I guess, in the early 80s. And, man, it's just beautiful country out there. We had the most beautiful ranch, about 60 acres, and then at 40 acres. And I wish we still had it, but my mom just got tired of taking care of so many horses and cows after a while, after my brother and I moved away. I think it was too tough. So she started showing with private trainers in Colorado. She had moved to Colorado for a while, but now she's back in Georgetown, which is great for me because I love that country.
Well, it's beautiful country out there. And talk a little bit about your music. When did you get started with music?
There's a YouTube video that the listeners should try to check out if it's still out there on Austin City Limits from about 1977.
Oh, wow.
And you'll see a very young Michael Murphy before he added the Martin. And an even younger, there's this little boy who comes out with Star Trek pants and carrying a banjo, and that's me. So you got to catch that video.
We sing a
Hank Williams song called Mind Your Own Business, and it's the most hilarious thing you've ever seen.
Well, I just wrote that down, so I'm going to check that out after the show. And
so I would say 7 years old there on getting
started. Wow. Well, did you, was learning to play an instrument difficult for you, or was it something that you just grew up with? Because you're a tremendous musician.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I've always taken the guitar very seriously, and I love the banjo, but I couldn't figure it out. And when I first saw my dad playing it, it literally seemed like he had some kind of magic trick. I thought it was real magic, and then later on I said, no, is there some kind of trick? Because I really liked magicians, too, at the time, and I was like, Dad, is there a trick to that? And he really wouldn't say anything. He would play it, and it would just come out. I mean, if you ever see Michael play banjo, he's really a good banjo player. So at some point I figured out that I wasn't going to figure out that trick, so I just took up the guitar and really got into the guitar, and then I was fortunate to get the job playing lead with him when I was about 17.
Oh, wow.
And played lead guitar with him. You know, I've played all these years off and on. Still to this day, so. Yeah.
Well, you're great on the mandolin, and talking about YouTube videos, somewhere I found a YouTube video, and I believe it was Geronimo's Cadillac, and you were not playing a stringed instrument.
That's another one you can look up, yeah. Let's see, I was about 22 on that, and for a while I had gotten really into jazz. I still am. Of course, the last song you heard, Beaumont, is a jazz-influenced Western swing, very close to my heart. And I love jazz, and so I had learned I taught myself how to play the soprano and tenor saxophone there. And I was very serious about it. You can tell on the video.
this is a very serious kid. Yeah, yeah.
So you got to check that out, too.
Well, actually, I'll tell you, I've seen Geronimo's Cadillac done several different times, different ways. I think that is my favorite. Rendition of Geronimo's Cadillac that I've seen. So, you know, all of our listeners out there, go to YouTube, look up Michael Martin Murphy and Ryan Murphy and Geronimo's Cadillac, and you'll love that one. But I'm going to go back and research that Austin City Limits when you were 7. That ought to be a ton of fun.
It's so cute, because at one point I interrupt him, just like, you know, we always have done, me and my dad. We'll correct each other when we make a musical mistake. But I did it live there on, you know, in front of millions of people, so it's
that's great. That is great. Well, talk to me a little bit about your writing, because you're a tremendous songwriter, and we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the co-writing that you've done. But when did you actually get started writing music?
I started writing in college. I think I was about 18, and Dad and I had the hit single "Talking to the Wrong Man," and everybody thought that I had written it because it was about my girlfriend. It was a very personal, pretty factual story, actually.
Right.
But I did not write the song. I just sang on it, and so everybody started encouraging me to write. So that's when it all started, back in 1990, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. Well, you're a terrific writer. We're going to take just a quick break. There's a song that's on your CD, New Old Song, and I encourage people to pick the CD up because it's great. It's got some very personal songs on there that we'll talk about, too, in just a little bit. And it looks like that's on Wrong Man Music is the company. So I guess that was the song.
It did. That's my publishing company, Wrong Man Music.
Yeah, I like that. But this is a song called "Keeping Time," and it's a great song that you co-wrote, I guess, with
a guy named Eric Quorum, which is kind of a funny last name. But I met him early on in the Nashville days, and we actually played in several different bands, some jazz, some country. And he's just a beautiful piano player. He plays the most beautiful piano. And we wrote some great songs together. And I've always loved "Keeping Time." That's a favorite. And that's a song that had almost been recorded so many times. That was the song back when I had my publishing deal.
Well, it's a great song.
I like that one, Garrett.
It is a great song. And so let's listen to "Keeping Time." This is Ryan Murphy, and you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Closet full of clothes. I heard she
with J.C. Penney's on the weekend, taking orders on the phone. She wasn't certain what she needed, but she knew she had to go. Now I'm taking my chances, waiting on her answer. I'm still keeping time. I keep a close watch on the skyline.
Murphy's Keeping Time. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and Ryan, that song should be getting a lot of play somewhere by someone.
Oh man, so many close calls. So if Tim McGraw, you're out there, you should have cut that one, man. He had it on hold, I think, three times in a row, and he never got around to it. So
he
was keeping time himself.
I guess he was. He could probably use a great song right about now. This would be a good one. Let's talk a little bit about and we did not introduce you as being the son of Michael Martin Murphy. You're so much more as an individual artist and writer and producer yourself. But Michael Martin Murphy is your dad, and you guys have toured together, you've written together. What was that like? What is that like?
It was amazing when I was a kid, I have to say. Some of the guys I met and places I got to see, just riding on the bus, you know, waiting in the wings of the concerts when I was 5 years old, 7 years old, and then getting to play with him later on, starting when I was 12, just playing rhythm guitar and then lead guitar. The first time I ever played an electric guitar solo, the curtain opened up. We were playing in Reno, and the first guy I saw was Clint Eastwood.
Oh.
Sitting
well,
next to Bernadette Peters, and that was, that's a scary moment right there, Gary. He's
wow.
like, you better play good.
Yeah, make my day. Yeah.
Make my day, kid.
Make my day. Make my day.
So those are the kind of experiences that, you know, you just can't get anywhere else. So I'm so fortunate to have grown up that way. And I got to learn guitar from the great guitarists that a lot of people don't know about, you know, just Nashville pickers that play on every record you've ever heard.
I used
to just watch them do their thing, you know.
Well, you've been exposed to some great artists, and obviously you learned your craft very, very well. When did you guys start writing together? Because we want to talk a little bit about Red River Drifter, and there's a song that you performed this on Friday night
for an event.
But how is the collaboration as far as writing? Because I'm interested in that regardless of whether it's a father and son or whoever it is that collaborates and writes together.
I love those stories myself. The first song we ever wrote together that I can remember is a song called Running Shadow, and it's still one of my favorite songs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get that on the America's Horses album that came out in 1996 on Warner Brothers Records. And it's a beautiful song that I wrote with Dad. It's kind of like the backstory, the prequel, if you will, to Wildfire.
Oh, wow.
It goes into explaining, it explains the legend of the ghost horse and where that comes from. And it's just a beautiful song about that stallion that's legendary in Native American traditions. And that's kind of where it started.
All right. Well, it's great. And then Red River Drifter has done very well, and there are some terrific songs on there. There's one of the favorite songs on that album is Secret Smile. And
beautiful song, yes.
We've played that a lot, and I think you and Murph and Pat Flynn.
We did. We co-wrote that together in a gorgeous spot in Colorado called Rye, Colorado, in a cabin there. The whole album was written there, actually.
Right.
It just really, I think it really inspired the music. If you listen to the record, there's a serenity in that music that came directly from that place.
Well, I think that all of you guys that wrote that song together claimed to your wives that you wrote it for them.
Yeah, basically, that's, we've each got a little line in there dedicated to each beautiful woman, yeah.
Right. Honey, look what I wrote for you while I was up in the cabin. That was, yeah, a pretty special song. So we're not playing that one today, but we have played that song quite a bit, and it's a great one. There's a song that you did from this this past Friday night called Mountain Storm. Can you talk to me a little bit about that one?
That is a favorite tune of mine, I have to say. Besides Running Shadow, that's probably my second favorite we've ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually wrote that song in Lake City. It was the only song that wasn't written in that place in Rye. And we were playing a show down there in Lake City, and Dad and I had driven up to the mountains in a Jeep like he loves to do. That's one of his favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
And we got out our guitars, and we were getting ready to write. And this rain, just this torrent of rain came out of nowhere. So we had to get our guitars and jump back in the Jeep and speed down the hill. Well, by the time we got down the hill, the rain had stopped and we saw a double rainbow, and it was just beautiful.
Oh, wow.
So we were kind of shaking our heads, you know, what happened to our writing session. So we went back to the cabin, and Dad started playing this really cool minor kind of mountain riff on his banjo.
Uh-huh.
And I started thinking about how some of my experiences with my daughter had kind of been really up and down.
So right.
We came up with this metaphor of how life is like a storm that comes and goes. And I just love the idea behind it. It's just a really cool song.
Well, it's a beautiful song, and this is Mountain Storm from the Red River Drifter album. And let's listen to that, and we're going to come back and talk with Ryan some more, and we want to talk about his beautiful family. And, again, you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio. We'll be back in a minute to talk more with Ryan Murphy.
Sudden clouds go sailing by. take the darkness, you take the light. Follow the trail beyond your time. Love is unforeseen and free. It's only constant in its change. It needs the thunder, it needs the steam, it needs the heat, it needs the truth. Oh, won't you wait a little while before you cry, before you smile? Love will grow cold, it will grow warm. True love is like a mountain storm. Thing you know, the sun will shine. See a double rainbow through the pines. Oh, won't you wait a little while before you cry, before you smile? Love will grow cold.
Mountain Storm on the Red River Drifter CD with Michael Martin Murphy and Ryan and some great, great artists that were on there. And this is a CD that Ryan produced. And I've mentioned before, he is an award-winning producer. You received the, I believe it was the Texas Producer Year of the Award, didn't you, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I did for the Buckaroo Bluegrass, the first Buckaroo Bluegrass album, which was also nominated for a Grammy that year. So that was an amazing year. Yeah.
Oh wow! Well, it's a great CD as well, and
I love that. Yeah.
We love playing music from that CD also. You've got a beautiful, beautiful family, Ryan. You know, your gorgeous wife Francie. I don't know how you did that. But you're like,
I don't know either. That was just pure luck.
Oh gosh. But anyway, and she did well too. I mean, you're just a great guy. But and then you have two beautiful daughters, Ellie and Fiona, and they are both little treasures and kind of like my children, my grandchildren. You know, they're all different. But how did you and Francie meet?
Oh, it's a great story. I was going to school in Santa Fe. I decided to go to the College of Santa Fe mainly because I wanted to be around my dad just to learn anything I could about music, and I wanted to play in his band. So I didn't know much about the school. I just knew it was going to be an hour from his house. So.
Right.
But as fate would have it, one of the first things that happened, the first day I was there, I was going into an orientation, and I saw this woman standing next to the place where you're going to go in, and it's almost like the heavens parted and the light shone down on her, and I forgot, you know, any girl woman I had ever seen. I knew that I had to meet this girl, and I felt like she was going to be an important part of my life. And we became friends. We did not date for many years. I think it was like 7 or maybe even 9 years. We were just really good friends.
Wow.
I was very much in love with her, but she had other ideas about it. And so I'm so glad you played Keeping Time, because the story behind that song was one of the times where we thought we were going to be together, but then she decided it wasn't going to work out. So I wrote that song about how I was just going to wait it out, you know, because I knew I couldn't be with anyone else. So I was just going to wait on her.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really glad you played that, because that was part of the story too.
Well,
and then one day she just showed up in Nashville. She had ridden the bus from New York City, where she was working at the time. And I guess she finally decided that we were going to be together, and we have ever since.
Well, that is fantastic story. That's a fantastic story. But now you've got two beautiful daughters.
Yes.
And you guys do live in Nashville.
We do.
What our folks don't know that are listening to the show is you actually are teaching school, and I think you're having to go through some kind of torture right now in Louisville. So.
Yeah, I'm chained to a chair all day, Gary, reading advanced placement essays in literature, and actually it's kind of a cool experience, but yeah, it sounds like torture to the average person.
Oh gosh, well I've been in meetings before, so you know it gets to be a little tough when you're inside and having to read essays all day. But well, tell us a little bit about your family.
Oh, my family, they really are a beautiful family. Fiona was born in 1999, and she is a pistol, as they say, a firecracker in the South. She says what's on her mind, and she has no fear, even though, considering her condition, you would think she'd be, you know, very meek. She will take over the room, you know. And I've written many songs about that, including the first one you heard tonight, High Stakes.
Right.
And then my second daughter, Ellie, she's a free spirit on her own, more in her thoughts. She's very imaginative. You know, she either thinks she's a wolf or a dinosaur. but if you see her playing, you know, you can't look at her because then it breaks the whole image, you know.
She's
playing a movie in her mind, and it's beautiful to watch her play. They're just wonderful kids.
Both of them are very special girls, and many of our listeners know, because we've been talking about this for months, and that is the fact that Fiona was born with a disease called osteogenesis imperfecta, which is brittle bone disease. And as you said, she knows no fear. She is a real firecracker, a little pistol, and she does tell you what's on her mind, and I really like that about her. But you wrote a song that we want to play right now, and you performed this past Friday night, you performed some songs that you wrote about Fiona.
This one is
one called Broken Doll. Can you tell us a little bit about that one before we play it?
I can. I wrote that when Fiona was 4 years old. She had had one of her major surgeries, and I think it was after she was recovering in surgery, I was just looking at her. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It just really, really tore up my heart to see such a beautiful girl with this big cast on. And it kind of made me start really questioning this disease and why she had to go through it. But what I came up with was that I think that Fiona is one of those angels that fell to earth. And that was my hypothesis in this song. So there's a line in the song where it calls her a fractured angel, because she has taught me more about my spirituality, I think, just watching her deal with this and her becoming the kind of young lady that she is, just fearless. So
that's
what Broken Doll is mainly about, is her teaching me, you know, about spirituality.
Well, it's a beautiful song, so let's listen to Broken Doll by Ryan Murphy, and we'll be back to talk more with Ryan in just a moment.
Broken doll, stand up tall, don't let the world tear you down.
That is a beautiful song. And Ryan, do you listen to these very often?
I really haven't listened to that in a while. That's a tough one to listen to, I got to tell you.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's pretty moving. Wow. But you put on a fabulous show last Friday night. And, you know, the songs that you performed were songs that had been written and influenced by Fiona. And that fragile Fiona had me back in tears, so I'm glad I didn't have to say anything. Beautiful family. You know, we didn't talk a lot about this disease that Fiona has, the brittle bone disease, the osteogenesis imperfecta. But a few years ago, I guess about 14 years ago now, the family established a foundation that was named after Fiona, and that's Fiona Rose Murphy Trust. And we had a national trail ride that was done to help raise money for the foundation, because not only does it help Fiona, but it helps other children that have bone disorders, and even occasionally some children that don't have, that need some help. And what did the girls think about the trail ride?
Oh, they had the best time ever, Gary. Recently, Fiona was she was taken off the list to continue Saddle Up, which is a program she really loved. So she hasn't gotten to ride much lately. So getting back on the horse, you know, is always really important. And she got to meet so many people who offered to let her come ride, you know, just informally. And Ellie got to ride the buggy, and just they both had such a great time there. And it's such a beautiful location, too.
Well, it is a beautiful spot. And folks loved meeting both of the kids, and enjoyed getting to meet you and your mom and Murph when he was there on Saturday.
Yeah.
Just a great event that we had. But and we raised a little money to help, so that was the first event that we did, and we're going to try to do that on an annual basis. We're already making plans for the next one to come up.
Yes.
But
such a blessing to have that, Gary. I'm so glad that happened, and just such a blessing to meet you and the way you and Fiona connected last fall. You know, I've never seen anything like it.
Well, as you said, she's a little firecracker, and so she doesn't let some good things wrong, and we've laughed about that. But but it was a great event, and I will say, if folks didn't make this event, they sure ought to put it on their calendar to join us next year when we do the second edition of this thing. So it was a lot of fun.
They really should, yeah.
There's a song I want to play now, because we want to play a lot of your music. We want people to know Ryan Murphy and his work. This one is one called Windfall. And is there a story about this one?
There is, yeah. It's Fiona's in that story, too. And it was a little bit later after Broken Doll. Fiona, I would say, was doing a little bit better at this point in 2008, but still having a lot of fractures and still having a lot of trouble. So I think it was causing me trouble more than her at that point. So I kind of got into a place where I was feeling like, you know, enough is enough. When are things going to get better? So I wrote this tune, Windfall, which the original meaning of that term comes from just any kind of good luck you can experience. And it refers to the wind blowing a fruit off the tree. So metaphorically, that would be your good luck. So I was just really trying to get that fruit to fall down so I could pick it up and have some good luck. And I think by writing the song, it really made me feel better, as so often it does, the songwriter, just to get your emotions out there so they're not inside you anymore. And that's
right.
What Windfall was about, was just trying to make things better. And it really worked.
Well, that is good, because it was a beautiful story, the way that you told it the other night and the way that the music came together.
Yeah.
But let's let our audience hear this one. This is Windfall, by Ryan Murphy, and this is on the CD New Old Song. And when we come back, we'll talk for a few minutes more with Ryan Murphy.
Wind blows cold, it's raining down in my soul, all alone cause I didn't take the call. And now I'm waiting for the windfall. Waiting for the windfall. Faith and hope will rise again. Waiting for the windfall. Good Lord's hand's gonna guide me again. And when that good day comes around, I'll be waiting for the wind to send my Savior down. Heaven knows, well, sometimes the devil's been my friend. All alone, riding with dark angels once again. Well, I didn't take the call, and now I'm waiting for the windfall. I'm waiting for the windfall. Well, faith and hope will rise again. Lord's hand's gonna guide me again. And when that good day comes around, I'll be waiting for the wind to send my Savior down. And when that good day comes around, I'll be waiting for the wind to send my Savior down.
Windfall by Ryan Murphy. And Ryan, where can people buy the CD?
They can get that on the iTunes store. It's probably the best place to find it, yeah.
Okay, all right. So check out iTunes. And again, that is the CD, New Old Song, Ryan Murphy. And check that out on iTunes. And also, Ryan has a Facebook page, so, you know, check him out on Facebook. That's a place where everybody kind of gathers today, and just a super, super talented guy. And I want to know what's going on as far as your music is concerned, and where are you going to be next?
Well, I'm very excited about the new project I'm working on. The first song you played today, High Stakes, is actually kind of a group project, a little band project I'm doing with some guys that used to live in Nashville and now they live in California. One guy's name is Johnny Dowers, and the other guy's name is David Lane, and we're calling ourselves the Sawdust Brothers.
Ryan, I like that.
The Sawdust Brothers, yeah, cool name. And yep. Johnny is actually he's an actor on a wonderful show called The Bridge, which you can check out the season 2 of The Bridge on FX this summer.
Okay.
He plays a detective on that show. And he sings on it, and David sings on it, and we all play together. And just, I'm really loving the songs we're writing together. Very excited about it. High Stakes being one of my favorites from the Sawdust Brothers.
From the Sawdust Brothers, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And did you say you were going to be somewhere in Colorado that was coming up? Or?
That's right. I'm playing a festival called Bands in the Backyard next weekend. Not this one, but the next one. With an artist that I produce. He's an incredible young guitarist, only 22, just a baby. And he kind of reminds me of John Mayer. He just plays that incredible guitar and writes really cool songs. And his name is Landon Williams, and a guy to look for. He's going to be a hot commodity pretty soon, I think.
All right. Well, one of my favorite people is Ryan Murphy, and I have really come to love you and your family, and I just really appreciate so much you taking the time to come on our show today, share your music, and talk a little bit about your family and yourself, and has been an absolute joy to have you join us today.
Likewise, Gary, and all the Murphys, we appreciate you so much, everything you've done for the foundation and for the whole family.
Well, I'm happy to do whatever small part that I can play to help bring awareness to this osteogenesis imperfecta, And my blessing has been able to meet you guys. So that's a great thing. That's a great thing. We're going to close out this segment with a song called Watershed, which is another terrific song from the new old song CD that you can pick up on iTunes. And Ryan, thanks again for joining us. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Robert, the Trailmeister Eversole. You're listening to Equestrian Excellent. Legacy Radio. And Ryan, thanks again for joining us today. Talk with you soon.
Thanks, Gary. Bye.
Straight to the bottom, where I was going to. Straight to the bottom, that's where I'd be without you. Straight out the window, that's where my hope had gone. Straight out the window, that's what I get for living wrong. But this time I'm gonna make things right. This time I finally found the light. You're my watershed, where I wash my soul in the well of the healing riverbed. You're my watershed, where I let go, let the current take me to the edge. Oh, how I love to drown in your watershed. Set me free. I feel the waves rushing in. I hear life's ocean call to me round the bend. 'Cause you're my watershed, where I wash my soul in the well of the healing riverbed. You're my watershed, where I let go. My watershed, where I wash my soul in the well of the healing riverbed. You're my watershed, where I let go, let the current take me to the edge. Oh, how I love to drown. Oh, how I love to drown in your watershed. In your watershed.
Robert Eversole is a columnist, speaker, go-to resource for trail riders across the country. And Robert, welcome back to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Gary, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, so happy to have you and looking forward to talking with you. There is a lot of material that we want to cover. But the first question I have for you is, who is the Trailmeister?
The Trailmeister is the nom de plume, I guess you'd say. And we are the largest horse trail and horse camping directory in North America. Got featured columns in, heavens, I think it's six or seven national and regional magazines now, and, you know, just trying to answer trail riders' questions and a lot of the questions that I had when I first started trail riding, you know, where to ride and how to do it safely.
Well, talk to us just a little bit. And you know, we talked the other day briefly. You're so busy. I think your horses are kind of like mine. They've been feeling a little bit neglected. But tell me how you got started with what you're doing.
Well, got started, heavens, it's been nearly a decade ago now, back in Ohio when I rode with the Mounted Search and Rescue Group and just found that there weren't good trail information available, you know, for trail riders and stuff. And so, gosh darn it, I figured if it wasn't going to be there, I'd start trying to put it together myself. And it went from, you know, what would you call it? A fundraiser type thing for the search and rescue, and it's grown into, you know, this website and magazine columns and everything. But it grew because, it happened because I just couldn't find good, reliable, accurate information out there, and so I tried to fix that. It was entirely self-serving.
Well, I do want to ask this a couple of questions.
Yeah.
that were on my mind. Were you someone that started riding as a young person, or did you start riding a little bit later in life?
I got into horses later in life. That's how I met my wife, at a fundraiser event for now it's called PATH International. It's an organization that teaches riding and equitation to children and adults with challenges, both cognitive and physical. And I went to one of the fundraiser activities, and I started chatting with the volunteer across the table, and I figured if I wanted to hang out with her, I needed to get more involved with horses, as well as the PATH organization. So my wife and I were both PATH instructors now. So a lot of times I think I get more out of the sessions than my kiddos do, quite frankly. It's a wonderful organization.
Well, that is great to be involved with an organization like that. And your story reminds me of a couple we had on a couple of weeks ago who met trail riding. And I think the statistics are about 76% of the trail riders are women. And so the encouragement there for fellows was to get out on the trails if you want to meet the right woman in your life. So it sounds like that worked out for you okay.
It worked out wonderfully. I'm terribly blessed.
Oh, that's great. Well, what is your favorite riding? And we're going to talk some more about some of your riding and your writing, not your riding. but what's your favorite trail riding?
My favorite trail riding, I'd have to say it's in the backcountry, Gary. I mean, let's face it, anytime you get on the horse, and it's a good thing. But I've really been blessed and fortunate to fall under the wing of some real true backcountry riders, and they've spoiled me. I blame them all. you know, I call it the 5 mile mark, and the folks that trail ride a lot will know what I'm talking about. It seems like when you get about 5 miles from the trailhead,
right,
for the trail gets a little bit narrower, where all your day riders and day hikers start turning around, you know.
Right.
That's where the backcountry gets really special to me. And those are the areas that I really find myself gravitating towards now. So my favorite trail ride would be areas like that. And as far as specifics about which one, heavens, there's so many, and there's so many wonderful stories. The Norse Peak Wilderness area in Washington Central Cascades is glorious. I got to take my father there a few years back, so that will always have a special place in my heart, I guess.
Okay. Now, are you located in Washington? Where is home for you?
I am. We moved last year from Seattle to Spokane. Really enjoying the sun now.
Goodness. Well, Washington State is a beautiful area to ride in. I've not done it myself, but we, you know, you were listening to the segment of the program with Ryan Murphy. And,
oh, yeah.
One of our ride locations for the National Trail Ride was at Butler Hill Equestrian Center just outside of Seattle in Burlington, Washington.
Exactly.
And, yeah, the weather was absolutely gorgeous there last weekend, and I know they had a great time helping to raise some money for that cause. One of the things that you talk about is riding in the backcountry without pack stock. And that probably has some challenges for people.
It does. I started, you know, riding in the backcountry. Like I said, some real backcountry riders and packers kind of took me under their wing and started riding with them. But then when my wife and I wanted to ride, you know, without having that dedicated pack animal, had to figure out how to get past that 5 mile mark and stay there for just a little bit, you know, for an overnight. And had to figure out ways to do that without, you know, overloading my riding stock, of course. We're asked them a lot, and no need to you know, overload them. So I really had to figure that out. And, you know, to this day, I still don't have that dedicated pack animal. I'm looking. So if anybody's out there has a good mule, let me know. I'll throw that out.
All right. Well, you may get a lot of contacts after the show.
I would be welcome. It needs to be short, gated, and broke to pack and ride. So that's what my wife and I do, and it works quite well. You know, and it's not for everybody. But we can go out and be relatively comfortable, I'll say, you know, for like an overnight or at most maybe two nights. You know, the weight of, you know, food is certainly a consideration, as well as, you know, the volume as well as the weight. But it's certainly doable, you know, for a night or like I said, perhaps even two. And we just enjoy it terribly. I don't think there's anything better than that first cup of coffee on a nice, cool, you know, alpine morning up in the high country, you know, where you're watching the animals graze. It's phenomenal.
Right, right. Well, and if I'm not mistaken, you like to eat fairly well when you go out in the backcountry too. So you don't sacrifice taste for no pack stock.
I try not to. I try not to. I am about the food. I'll be the first to admit, much to my wife's chagrin, I believe. You know, there are certain gives and takes. You know, freeze-dried food is never going to be as good as, you know, that hot steak on the grill. But at the end of the day, everything tastes pretty good. Now, at the trailhead, I'm all for gourmet. Yes, I think my reputation as a food hound has preceded me. Heavens.
Well, I tell you, I took a peek at the website, and by the way, let me just mention that's Trailmeister, TrailMeister.com, Trailmeister.com. But it seems like there was a recipe or something for brownies, so I kind of had an idea that you like to eat pretty well.
Oh, yes, yes. I was speaking this year down in Norco, California. I was just honored as can be. The Backcountry Tourism of California, they have their rendezvous down in L.A., the antithesis of backcountry, I think, you know, in Norco, right next to L.A., but they asked me to come down and speak, and I met this guy who makes this backcountry oven device, and he played quite dirty pool, I might add, because he kept bringing me snacks throughout the weekend, everything from pizza that he made in the oven to brownies and muffins. So before I left, I made sure to pick one of those up. And I've got to tell you, Gary, there's nothing quite like fresh bread or brownies when you're a few miles in.
Goodness. Well, I you know, eating well, but packing smart is really important when you're doing that backcountry. And I'm pretty sure that when you get into the backcountry, you might hear a few wilderness sounds. We're going to take just a real quick break. Don Edwards, one of his classic songs is a song called Coyotes. So we're going to listen to that for just a moment. When we come back, Robert, I'd like to talk a little bit about a new featured column that you're doing with Trailblazer. And then we're going to open our lines up for folks if they want to call in and ask some questions. But we're talking with Robert Trailmeister Eversole. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we'll be right back.
Cowboy I knew in South Texas. His face was burnt deep by the sun. In part history, part sage, and part Mexican, he was there when Pancho Villa was young. And he'd tell you a tale of the old days, when the country was wild all around. Sit out under the stars of the Milky Way, and he'd listen while the coyotes they howl. They go, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo. Now the longhorns have gone, and the drovers have gone. The Comanche is gone, and the outlaws have gone, and Geronimo's gone, and Sam Bass is gone, and the Red Wolf is gone, and the buffalo's gone. Cursed all the roads and the oil men. He even cursed the automobile. And he said, this ain't no place for an hombre like I am, in this new world of asphalt and steel. Then he'd look off someplace in the distance. That's something only he could see. And he'd say, all that's left now, the old days, or them damned old coyotes and me. And they go, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo, ooh, yippoo, yippoo. Now the longhorns have gone, and the drovers have gone, and the Comanche's gone, and the outlaws have gone, and Geronimo's gone, Stan Watty is gone, and the Red Wolf is gone, and the buffalo's gone. And one morning they searched his adobe. He disappeared without even a word. And that night as the moon crossed the mountain, one more coyote was heard. And he'd go, ooh-yip-ooh-yip-ooh, ooh-yip-ooh-yip-ooh,
That's Don Edwards, Coyotes, and we're talking with Robert Eversoll, and I guess you hear a few of those when you're in the backcountry.
I do. In my neck of the woods, we hear the Coyotes, of course. I think they're fairly, you know, common across the nation, but one of the things that I dearly like to hear are the elk. The first time I heard an elk in the backcountry, I was scared to death, Gary. I didn't know what the heck it was, because it doesn't sound, you would think a 1,000-pound animal would, you know, maybe it would sound like a cow or something, you know, but it's this high-pitched bird-like song. They call them mountain canaries. But it's this oddest thing, but it's, you know, after you figure out what it is, it's one of those just glorious parts of camping in the backcountry to hear the elk, you know, in the evenings.
Well, I think one of the great things about being in the outdoors on horseback is that you get to slow down and really appreciate nature and all of the sounds and the aromas. That being out in the clean outdoors, you know, can bring to you. And one of the only ways that you get to experience that is by getting out into the backcountry or in our national forest. So it's pretty cool stuff. Trailblazer Magazine, and I believe, and they're good friends of ours. I appreciate Trailblazer. They did a great article for us on the National Trail Ride that we just finished. But you're writing a feature column for them now, and I think that you told me people were able to submit questions, and you addressed those things. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bobby Joe, my editor at Trailblazer, and Susanna Gibson, they are just the berries. But they approached me. I have a monthly column in Trailblazer, different places to ride and camp with your horses.
Uh-huh.
And then last year, Susanna approached me and asked if I would be, I guess the best way to describe it would be the Dear Abby, I guess, of the horse riding world. And I thought, you know, I like the idea, but I don't claim to be an expert of much anything, Gary. So what I did was I said, I'd love to do the column. I think it's going to be a great bit of fun. But instead of me being a talking head, there's plenty of those in the world. How about I get together with the real experts and get their thoughts about these questions that readers are sending in? And it has just been a hoot. This last issue that came out back in April was just wonderful. We sent to the I guess you would call it the internets on the Facebook through Trailblazer's Facebook friends and the like, and with this year being the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, we had people send in their questions about riding and camping in the backcountry.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was the questions people send in are just wonderful, just the berries. And I wish we had more room in the column to answer everybody's questions.
Right.
And so for that column, I got together with three just tremendously experienced packers, a guy named Ed Hafliger from the Olympic Peninsula. He was recently awarded this big thing by President Obama for having thousands and thousands of volunteer trail hours packing for the Olympic National Park. And so he helped answer questions. A gentleman named Andy Breland from Kalispell, Montana, he runs a program called Bo, Becoming an Outdoors Woman, and he teaches packing to women. Earlier, you talked about how like 76% or 78% of trail riders are women, and you know he helps those women, you know, become more comfortable in packing, and he that's what he does, and he does a wonderful job. And then for the third part of the trifecta, I interviewed Mr. Smoke Elzer, And for those that haven't heard the name, Mr. Elzer is a longtime packer and outfitter from Montana, but he was one of the founders of the whole, you know, backcountry horseman trails advocacy stuff. In Montana's public broadcasting service, PBS, they did a feature-length movie on him called 3 Miles an Hour. If you're listening, you can Google, you know, Montana PBS 3 Miles an Hour, and you'll see this movie that they did on Mr. Elzer and how he has tried to, you know, really instill a love of the backcountry in all of his, you know, packing clients, you know, through the decades. So it was just great to have, you know, these three super experienced people, you know, kind of go into the hows and whys, you know, in answering the questions that the readers had sent in. If you can't tell, I really like this column.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what is the most often asked question that you get, maybe through the column, or I know that you do a lot of horse expos and are traveling a lot, have been traveling a lot. What's the most most often asked question that you get?
Well, I would have to say the most often asked question that I get is, what about critters, you know, lions and tigers and bears, oh my, you know, or some variation on that. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And the, you know, the, I'm hedging here, can you tell? The biggest critter concern that I have when trail riding, even in the backcountry, is bees and ground bees. The few times I've had the privilege of seeing, you know, a bear or a cougar or a moose or what have you, you know, on the trail, you know, generally you see the rear end as they're going over the next ridge.
Right.
You know, most times there isn't a problem and you don't see them. Let's face it, we're fairly noisy as we go down the trail.
Right.
Bees, on the other hand, if you're that second or third person back after they've been stirred up, that might be a little bit of a rodeo.
Right, right. Well, and that's been something that I've seen people writing about all year, because that's been a problem for folks regardless of what part of the country you're in. And so that's kind of a challenge. Talk to me just a little bit about the horse expos that you do and what goes on there.
Oh, the horse expos, I've been privileged enough to have been invited to, well, heavens, up and down the West Coast, so the Washington Backcountry Horseman Rendezvous, California Rendezvous. In Oregon, they call it the Wilderness Skills Clinic. So I nearly forgot the biggest one, the Midwest Horse Fair. In Madison, Wisconsin, I was one of their speakers, and so pretty much what they do is have me come in, and I talk about camping without pack stock, you know, how to do it, and how to do it safely without overburdening your beast, as well as how to use that map and compass. I think a lot of people have stashed in the bottoms of their saddlebags, you know, almost as a talisman for good luck without really knowing how to use them.
Right.
So we talk about that. I got into these talks initially, you know, because of the map and compass classes. That's one of the things that I taught when I was serving as a U.S. Marine. And I guess I'm somewhat old-fashioned, but I'd much prefer a map and compass, you know, to a modern GPS unit. There's a lot less to break, if you will.
Right.
And so we talk about that. The map and compass classes are really, really my passion, I guess. We have a lot of fun in those. We play with Play-Doh, you know, in one of the modules.
Goodness. Well, we want to give our listeners an opportunity to call in and ask questions, and the number they can call is 213-943-3396. 213-943-3396, And we're going to take another brief break and get those calls in. We're going to listen to Joni Harms and a song called Saddle Blanket. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're talking with Robert Trailmeister Ebersol. Robert, sometimes I feel like I need a security blanket when I'm out on the trail. And I will admit that I have a fear of heights. And I'm sure that when people are getting started a little bit later in life, as many folks do, they have some concerns when they're out on the trail. How do you address people's questions when they talk about how do they prepare, how do they overcome some of their fears and concerns when they're riding?
Well, heavens, Gary, sitting 5 foot up off the ground on a 1,000-pound animal, you'd be silly not to have some concerns, I think. You know, Lord knows I do. you know, and you know, especially folks getting into it late in life, like myself, you know, I'm not 10 years old and bulletproof anymore. I break. I'm fragile. Heck. So fear, I think, you know, I think a little bit's a good thing.
it
keeps you from perhaps being silly, to put it very lightly. Some of the things that I've learned over the years to help me overcome my fear, you know, like you, I'm terrified of heights. And unfortunately, I live in the Rockies.
Right.
So when you're side hilling on the side of a mountain, when one stirrup is kind of brushing the mountain and the other is hanging untold feet above, you know, it's not uncommon if you ride with me to, you know, to look back or ahead and kind of see me looking at that uphill shoulder just humming along. And when it gets real hairy, I'll just start singing. Not well, but singing.
Oh, gosh. Well, I had a great gelding that I rode for a long time, and he was terrific about stepping over closer to the hill and away from the edge. And he knew
Doesn't
I didn't
it
like
seem
that.
Like they do that?
Yeah. He just was taking care of me, and I appreciated that. What kind of fear and challenges do you find that most people have, and how do you address those things besides humming and singing?
Well, a lot of it is the humming and singing. And the humming and singing, the reason I say that is because it makes you breathe. And if you think about it, when we get nervous and tense, whether it's because you're on the side of a hill or you're on a horse that just wants to jig and not just relax, you know, when we're tense, what do? We stop breathing.
Right.
And once we can get that breathing started up, everything else kind of flows. That's one of the things I learned as a path instructor, you know. So, you know, some of the bravest people that I've ever met have been some of my students. You know, you've got somebody with, you know, a challenge, but they're still getting on the horses. So we do a lot of singing, gosh darn it. It works for me. I use it in the backcountry. So, you know, if you're tense, sing. and I think that really loosens everything else up. And makes it a lot easier going. I mean, of course, there's, you know, the fear of falling. I mean, like you said, the world's a lot further away when you're sitting on an animal. That's one of the reasons I like short horses, I guess. But, you know, falling is I think we could probably all agree that falling is off your animal is a when, not an if kind of proposition.
Right.
And, you know, I may look silly, but I sometimes practice falling off in the round pen.
Wow.
You know, I mean, if we accept that it's going to happen, shouldn't it be a good thing that, you know, when it does, we let muscle memory take over, and as opposed to trying to hang on past that point of no return?
Right.
I have terrible fears about being hung up in stirrups. You know, I think we all have our phobias, whether they're grounded or not. They're all there, and if they're there, I think they're valid, and we need to do something about them.
What besides the fact that some of us don't like heights, what are some of the biggest fears that people have about maybe going into the backcountry for the first time, as far as preparation, and what should they be doing?
Well, a lot of the fears that I hear are, you know, like we mentioned earlier, a little bit, you know, the critters. Exactly. You know, the bears and lions and tigers, oh my. And I think that's certainly a concern. But I think our biggest concern that we need to address when we go for a backcountry ride is how are we going to feed and water our animals?
Right.
And that boils down to, you know, preparation before you go, you know, visiting the web, seeing what's in the XYZ area, even better, linking up with a local riding group who you know, travels those areas regularly, or the ranger that's responsible for those areas. You know, what do I have to expect? Let's leave the adventures at home. you know, so that's my big concern anytime I go in. Am I going to be able to find good feed, graze, and water for my animals? Everything after that is kind of secondary. You know, if I don't have good feed and graze, I'll shift fire and find another place to go. You know, the other big thing is, you know, am I going to be okay in case, you know, there's an emergency, you know?
Right.
So am I prepared? Do I have a good first aid kit with me? And do I know how to use it? Sometimes I think first aid kits are kind of like those maps and compasses. We have them, but, you know, when the time comes,
what do we
to
do
use
with
them,
it?
Exactly. You know,
right.
The worst time to learn.
That's right. When you need it.
Exactly. So those kinds of things. It's more about the pre-trip preparation, I think, than anything else. I think we blow up a lot of the concerns, specifically about, you know, critters and things of that nature. You know, these terrible, terrible things that certainly could happen, but the chances of them happening are, you know, we have a worse chance of getting an accident on the drive into work in the morning. You know what I mean?
Right.
You
right.
know, so good to consider them, but let's take care of what we know is going to happen first. It does.
And I would think too, you know, there are just some basic things that people should do. First of all, it's probably best not to ride alone. I know some people really enjoy getting out and exploring on their own, but probably wise to make sure you have somebody you go with. Probably a good thing to make sure that people back home somewhere know what your plans are and when to expect you back, and a few things like that. You will know more of some of those tips, I guess, than I certainly would.
You know, some, and certainly, you know, I used to be one of those guys that would just love to go out by himself until my wife decided that it wasn't the safest thing, and now I'm not allowed. yeah, I guess she wants to keep me around, so that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
But things as simple, like you said, as riding with a buddy, leaving a note, hey, this is where I'm going, this is when I plan on being back. Having that first aid kit, having that map and compass with you. You know, let's face it, it's easy to get turned around in the woods sometimes. You know, that type of thing. Having we call them here on the West Coast the 10 essentials, you know, in case you're stuck overnight. You know, can you make it through the night? Do you have enough to, you know, snacks for you, you know, a whistle, some way to stay out of the rain, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, that type of stuff. And again, it goes down to that pre-trip planning, and just making sure that you are prepared for, you know, those eventualities, I guess.
Okay.
But a lot of it is just, hate to say common sense, because it, you know, sometimes it's not, but that's the best way for me to describe it. You know, just think about what can happen and how you're going to deal with it.
Right. Well, and that brings me to, I think, to your website. Talk to us a little bit about trailmeister.com and how that can be used as a resource for people.
Oh, wonderful. So trailmeister.com, it is the largest horse camping and trail directory in North America. We've got about 1,700 places listed across the nation. And for what we've tried to do is give everybody that that basic heads-up information, not just accurate directions on how to get to the area, but what to expect when you get there. Are there corrals? Are there tie stalls? What's the weather forecast for the area? Even more importantly, who are the land managers? So is it national forest? Is it state park? And what are some of the rules that I have to comply with to go there? Here in the West, certified weed-free feed is a big thing. They're, you know, to prevent invasive plant species. And
right.
if you get caught with a bale of regular hay in your trailer, that's going to be one expensive trip because the fines are pretty steep. So we try to give riders that type of information as well as links to more. One of the things with the redesign, we've completely redesigned the site. And Gary, I must confess, I am a terrible backer of my horse trailer. I can't back the thing to save my life. And so one of the things that we put on, you know, to help people, because I know I'm not the only one.
Right, right.
To help people with that is we have high-res satellite imagery of the parking areas. So are they back-in areas? Are they pull-through areas? You know, that type of information. Enough information to get you to the trailhead with knowing what to expect. Again, to minimize that adventure factor.
Okay.
And that's really the heart of the website. And, you know, we're collecting new data every day. Before anything goes live on the website, myself or one of my trail bosses, you know, calls the land manager to make sure that, you know, everything is copacetic. I think we've all, you know, had the experience with, oh, we're allowed to ride here. Horses are welcome. Just go past the red barn that burned down 3 years ago and pull over the side of the road. It'll be fine. And you find out that it's not.
Right, right, right. Well, now, so, Robert, I'm back here in Tennessee, so if I decided that I wanted to take a trip out to Washington, can I use your website to plan my trip and find locations where I can stay or maybe want to travel as I go?
Yes, you can. Just go to the homepage of the website, like you said, www.trailmeister.com, and you'll see this big U.S. map on that home screen, and you just click over the state that you're interested in, and it'll pull up all the areas you have in that state. And then you can click on those maps to drill down to the specific trail areas. And we also have, it's a little bit twitchy at the moment, I hate to admit it, but I'd rather say it up front, we have a trail search feature up at the top. It should be better by the end of the day, where you can type in, you know, the city or the zip code of an area that you're interested in and see everything around, you know, a radius that you decide. You know, so if you want to come out to Tennessee and visit us here on the east side of the Rockies, I know where you can stay, Gary.
All right.
We'll put you up on some mountains. I'll put you on a good mountain horse.
All right, well, I'll need one.
There you go. And so that's really how I think most people use the website. When I was talking in Madison, Wisconsin, met a guy there, and he used the website to take a two-month trip from Wisconsin to, I believe it was South Dakota, and back. And so he used the places along, you know, on the website to plan his trip, because you can sort by, is camping allowed? You know, is there a potable water? Stuff like that, trail mileage even. So it worked really well for him, and it just warmed my heart that, you know, that the tool that I'm trying to create is actually helpful for people.
Right, right. Well, and that's important. We had a young lady on sometime in the past month that left from San Diego with her living quarters trailer, two horses and a dog, and she had never pulled a trailer before, anything larger than a lightweight something behind her SUV, and has taken off across country. And right now she's traveled 28 states and intends to hit all of the lower 48. When we talked with her, she really didn't know where she was going at first. And so that became a challenge for her, and your website would have been a great tool for her.
I like to think so, and what a wonderful trip. Isn't that what we all dream about
as
horse riders and horse owners?
Right, right. And, you know, that's kind of on my bucket list to do something similar to that before I'm just too old to do it. I want to come back and talk just a little bit more about your activities with these equine affairs, and I know that you've got some speaking engagements that are coming up.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for reminding me about that, Gary. Coming up, I'm terribly excited about it. In August, the Pennsylvania Quarter Horse Association is having me in. They're having their Elkstravaganza in Benzet, Pennsylvania. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, I never knew that there were elk, that far east, but evidently they are. And they're having this huge to-do, really aimed at the equestrian crowd and trail riders. And we're going to be camping and riding. It's a big organized trail ride kind of thing. They're out of Benzet, I believe it's Pennsylvania Department of Conservation property, this huge, large forest. And we're going to be doing talks on the land navigation and horse camping light while I'm there. And I dearly hope to be able to get some riding in myself. But I think it's going to be a wonderful time. And if listeners want to learn more about that, they can just go to PQHA, Pennsylvania Quarter Horse Association, on the web. And there's going to be all sorts of information about it.
Well, that sounds like a great event. And what are the dates again on that?
It's in August, and I believe it's middle of August. So I don't have the dates right in front of me.
Okay.
But mid August. So the hottest part of summer.
Well, hopefully it'll be a little cooler in Pennsylvania than it might be in Tennessee at that time. But
probably you should come up and visit.
That would be pretty cool. I'd like to make a trip up there. You know, we have elk that they released in the eastern part of Tennessee back in the Great Smoky Mountains, and the elk herds have done so well that they have actually started migrating a little further west. And
really?
So it's, so there's a real push to bring back wildlife that had been native to different parts of the country at one time and then just disappeared. And so far the reintroduction of the elk herds have been very successful, and it sounds like that's the case in Pennsylvania as well.
I may get
to hear that high-pitched sound that you've enjoyed out on the West Coast.
Once you hear it, you'll be back more and more and more.
Well, it sounds good. Well, let's take just a real quick break, and we're going to come back for some final thoughts, and we're talking with Robert Eversole. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio.
Say, Sam, do you remember a long time ago when we rode together where the Wyoming winds blow? High on a ridgetop, just you and me, we'd watch the wild horses running so free. Lick was jerky and coffee, about half alkali, and a biscuit or two, we'd down on the fly. That old Mustang fever sure ran in our veins, and it seemed like the devil was holding the reins. Now we're chasing all the memories, though trails have grown dim, to the cedars and canyons below the Kinney Ridge. When it was just you and me and the Mustangs there in the blue shadow below the old Kinney Ridge. Love, back on the trail until the very last of our daylight had faded. Bed on the ground, then up before daybreak we'd go one more round. While them old ponies are just about gone, there's a few left like us, they're still holding on. One of these days, well, they'll catch the last one, but I reckon by then we'll have finished our run. Now we're chasing all the memories, those trails have grown dim, to the cedars and pinions below the Kenny Rim. When it was just you and me and the Mustangs there in the blue shadow below the old Kenny Rim.
Linda Gales, Below the Old Kenny Rim, and during that song I found out that Robert and I are both starting to attack the guitar, and so the next time he's on we may have dueling guitars instead of dueling banjos, so that may be a treat for folks, Robert.
Gary, I think it would be a very, very short dueling banjo, because I don't know that I'm even that far along, but we will try.
We'll try that. We'll try that. At least we might be able to make a drum out of them or something. So
perhaps we'll have to get Mr. Murphy back.
That's right. That is right. Hey, listen, it's always fun to talk with you. It's been a few months since you were on the show last time. We never get everything in that I would like to talk about, and would love to have you come back again. But before we say goodbye, what kind of closing thoughts would you like to leave with folks?
Well, it's still early in the summertime, and there's so much great places to ride and to camp with your horses. I would just want to wish everybody, you know, a great and safe summer. You know, hopefully some folks will visit the website to find new places to ride and to camp. And really looking forward to coming back again. As always, the time just flies. Just love the opportunity to chat with you and the listeners out there. So have a great ride and some great camping and some good food, and we'll talk again soon.
Well, I look forward to it. And again, the website is trailmeister.com. And there's also a Facebook page for Trailmeister, so we'd encourage people to go and like that page and kind of follow you there as well. You know, you've got great tips on equipment and as well as locations to ride, so it's a great website. People need to really get engaged with that as well. So, Robert, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. I appreciate it very much. And be sure and try to make that event in Pennsylvania. And go to pqha.com.
pqha.com or .org.
Okay.
I just tend to Google things, so I don't really know what the ending prefix is.
All right. Well, it will come up, and folks can find out what the exact dates are and locations and information on that, too. So it would be great to be able to see you up there. So, Robert, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and look forward to seeing you again. Take care.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Well, we've had a great show today. I want to thank our guest today, Ryan Murphy. It was so much fun talking with Ryan and learning more about his family and listening to his great music. And of course, we thank Robert Trailmeister Eversole for joining us and sharing information with us as well. Next week on Equestrian Legacy Radio, we have the beautiful and talented Stephanie Lane that will join us around the Campfire Cafe. And from New Mexico, we have artist and author Ann Clemons, who will join us, and we'll be talking about her book. So we appreciate you listening today. We're on at noon Central Standard Time every Thursday, and you can listen to the podcast of all of our past shows at equestrianlegacy.net. We remind you that if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening.
At our ranch house on the plains, and all I've got to do is lay around. I saddle up my pony and I ride off down the trail to watch the desert sun go down. Riding down the canyon, watch the sun go down, a picture that no artist e'er could paint. White-faced cattle lowing on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down. Sun go down, a picture that no artist e'er could paint. White-faced cattle lowing up on the mountainside, I hear a coyote whining for his mate. Cactus plants are everywhere, granite spires standing all around. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down. I tell you folks, it's heaven to be riding down the trail when the desert sun goes down.